It's 19 hours 30 UTC on Friday, January 12th, and this is Zimbabwe Today.
Mnangagwa, through the army, has managed to rise to power. And we need to admit to the fact that there has been a coup in this country. It doesn't matter whether this coup has been popular. This is a coup.
That was Zimbabwe religious leader Bishop Anselmo Magaya. He's part of a public debate over military support for the new government.
Good evening. I'm Chidonjere.
And I'm Kudzinai Mutetwa on Zimbabwe Today.
The military intervention in Zimbabwe late last year has left many with mixed feelings on whether it can be classified as a coup or not. Some critics say that this is a question better left for the academics and historians to deliberate on. Reporter Kudzai Zinawashe has the report from Harare.
Last year, the military managed the retirement of longtime ruler President Robert Mugabe and set in place a former vice president, Emmerson Mnangagwa. The military denies it was a coup, an assertion supported by the Southern African Development Community. A formal declaration of a coup would prevent the US and others in the international community from lending support to the new government. The Zimbabwe Democracy Institute, a local think tank, had been working on a paper investigating the involvement of the army and securocrats in civilian matters. Vegezela Gumbo is a principal researcher at the institute. Its study says the political economy was under military capture.
The paper was on military capture of the political economy in Zimbabwe. Our intention was to uncover the extent to which the military has captured key state institutions and economic institutions and the implications. The paper was done prior to the military takeover that we experienced.
The paper was released after the military intervention, but Gumbo said they had noted that Zimbabwe was on the verge of a military coup. He says it was because Mugabe had stopped supporting the interests of the army that put him in power. As the military intervention was taking place, Morgan Tsvangirai, the leader of the main opposition, Movement for Democratic Change, said it was not a coup.
Well, what is a coup? What is a military takeover? As far as I am concerned, any unconstitutional means donates a situation in which anyone can conclude. I know that the military have said it's not a coup, and we believe them. We hope they will be able to extricate themselves out of that definition.
It is now over a month into the post-Mugabe era under the leadership of Zimbabwe's new president, Emmerson Mnangagwa. The new administration has found international support and convinced some that it was not a coup. But not everyone agrees. Bishop Anselmo Magaya is the leader of the Zimbabwe Divine Destiny, a body made up of religious churches.
Mnangagwa, through the army, has managed to rise to power. And we need to admit to the fact that there has been a coup in this country. It doesn't matter whether this coup has been popular. This is a coup.
Coup or not, the military's move was indeed popular. Hundreds of thousands of Zimbabweans took to the streets calling for Mugabe to go. It was a carnival atmosphere when news reached the public he had tendered his resignation. Godfrey Tsenengamu is the ruling ZANU-PF Youth Political Commissar.
I'm not sure if whoever is saying it was a coup knows what it means when they allege that it was a coup. Because the ex-president openly said that this was not a coup. And since it affected him, I'm not sure if there is anyone else outside who is not the ex-president who must then be alleging that it was a coup if the one who got affected by the so-called coup said it was not a coup.
He adds that whoever says it is a coup is part of a grand scheme coordinated by former Education Minister Jonathan Moyo and Minister of Local Government, who were aligned to the Mugabe-linked G40 government. Thabani Moyo is the spokesperson of Crisis in Zimbabwe Coalition. He says military involvement in the state is upsetting.
They initially said they will not salute anyone without war credentials. And slowly but surely, we are drifting towards they won't salute anyone without military credentials. It is quite a worrying trend that whereby the army used to present a facade of civilian rule through electing a civilian, now they've thrown caution through the window. They've taken over outright.
Some critics say the people who took to the streets were celebrating the exit of Mugabe, but very few were celebrating the rise of Mnangagwa to power. While others say the world stood over and watched from the terraces as they collectively wanted Mugabe's back. Having isolated himself in the global village didn't help the situation. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
Njani mahlabe zulu linjani zulu kandaba sifisa ukulibikela ukuthi silethulela indaba ezimqotho ngeZimbabwe suku zonke ngo 6 am 2 pm la 7 pm eZimbabwe lisibamba kumagagasi athi 909 medium wave 4930 15580 la ku 6080 shortwave frequencies lilakho njalo ukusithola ebulenjini bokuzilibazisa ku Facebook ukhasi lethule VOA Ndebele
land of sunshine.
Amid optimism of an economic recovery under the new government in Zimbabwe, food prices have been rising sharply, forcing many to cross the border into neighboring Botswana, where basic commodities are comparatively cheaper. From Habarone, Botswana, reporter Martin Gwenya has the details.
It is still early morning, but the Ramakwena Plum Reporter crossing between Botswana and Zimbabwe is already teeming with hundreds of Zimbabweans. They are preparing to cross into the neighboring country for what has become daily shopping trips. The recent price hikes in basic commodities has forced many to cross into Botswana to buy groceries. Zimbabwe has experienced a sharp spike in the price of most commodities in the last 2 months, blamed on the country's acute cash shortages. The price madness has seen Zimbabweans crossing to Botswana, where commodities are comparatively cheaper. Miss Pauline Banda is one of the many shoppers who travel from Bulawayo to Botswana's second city, Francistown, which is 200 kilometers away.
Yeah, we're forced to come to Botswana to buy some of the basic things like toiletries because of the high prices in our country.
Mostly, the Zimbabwean shoppers buy foodstuffs, including meat and other basic commodities, which, although available in their homeland, are out of reach of many. Mrs. Datenda Ndlovu, also from Bulawayo, says there is no option at the moment but to make the 400-kilometer round trip to Francistown.
The situation in Zimbabwe is very bad about prices. We are very worried because we cannot survive to buy in Zim. During Christmas, I had to cross over to Botswana to go and get some groceries. And this is all forex lost. People are having to go out of the country instead of spending money in Zimbabwe. You look at meat, is $14 a kg. While across the border, things are still reasonable.
A Zimbabwean economic analyst based in Habaroni, Mr. Bright Sidube, says the government should move in and address the price hikes.
The new government is expected to have done something as regards the availability of basic commodities. People follow logic. If basic commodities are too expensive at home, they will actually cross to other countries. It is still a shame that people are still crossing over to Botswana and the like to buy basic commodities, some of them which are produced locally in Zimbabwe.
This week, Zimbabwe's Finance Minister, Mr. Patrick Chinamasa, ruled out imposing price controls to address the challenge. Instead, he says the government will continue to engage businesses with a view to finding a lasting solution. Reporting for VOA's English to Africa service, this is Martin Ngwenya in Habron, Botswana.
As President Emmerson Mnangagwa's government gets down to work in a bid to turn around the country's economy after decades of decline, Zimbabweans in the diaspora are urging his administration to identify all the major blunders of the previous government in order to avoid falling into the same trap. Duso Kumalo speaks with these diasporans about some of the worst decisions, situations, and conditions that prevailed under Robert Mugabe's regime, which they want President Mnangagwa's government to avoid at all cost.
President Robert Mugabe's 37-year rule was marred with problems. Inflation ran into trillions of Zimbabwean dollars. A loaf of bread required a heap of cash. And some used goats to pay for school fees. Many in the diaspora want the new president, Emmerson Mnangagwa, to acknowledge these and give assurances that they will not happen under his administration. Melissa Dube, in her 30s, left Zimbabwe for South Africa when it became clear that the economy was on its knees. But she says even in South Africa, the greener pastures are not green anymore.
May he try by all means to resuscitate the economy. Because look at us guys, we did go to school, we did pass with flying colors, but we are out there in the diaspora doing some embarrassing jobs and you don't have the proper documents. We are asking, we want to come back home. We are intellectuals, we have got everything. So I'm appealing to the president, please.
And another young Zimbabwean in South Africa, Nkasise Ligwaza, says he wants the new president to crack down on the culture of impunity and government-driven violence, especially during elections.
At one point, we had war veterans who were beating up people. Some other people were being thrown into the dams. A lot of things that were not right with the previous regime. So we just hope the new regime is going to have a way whereby people will live in peace and harmony.
Others want Mnangagwa to be the people's president as opposed to Mugabe, who harshly punished his critics and killed his opponents. They want all to be equal before the law and corrupt government officials to be severely punished. Thuso Khumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
The Zimbabwean government says it is preparing for the repatriation of Rwandese refugees following the declaration by the United Nations that their country is now safe and peaceful. From Harare, correspondent Patricia Mudadigwa brings us more.
The Rwandese secession clause came into effect at the end of December. It's part of the 1951 Refugee Convention and was declared by the UNHCR on June 30, 2013. The clause nullifies the refugee status for Rwandans, leaving them with two options: to either repatriate or to become citizens of the host countries. Zimbabwe, which is part of the 1951 Refugee Convention, now just has to declare that they are implementing the clause. Labour and Social Welfare Minister Petronella Kagonye, speaking on Thursday, said government is finalizing legal processes needed to declare the secession. She said this after meeting Robert Tibagwa, the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees representative in Zimbabwe.
United Nations recommended to governments that Rwandese can no longer be refugees. So it's up to governments either to declare the secession or not to declare it. And as Zimbabwe, we are in the process of finalizing the legal processes of declaring that secession. And we shall issue out a joint statement together with the UNHCR once all the processes are finalized.
Kagonye says government has started profiling the 240 Rwandese refugees in the country and there will be no forced repatriation.
There is no resistance as such, but what we are doing as a ministry, we are currently profiling them to see those who would want to go back and those who have already been part of the community, so that maybe if there is an opportunity, we can naturalize them. They can become Zimbabweans. But we are actually profiling each and everyone to see the current status, considering that some of them have been in this country maybe for 17 years, maybe for 12 years, they become part of us.
The minister lamented the country's scarce resources, noting that the number of refugees coming into the country is on the increase. She, however, said government is getting assistance from UNHCR to provide for them.
When the refugees come in seeking asylum, they are held in transit camps where vetting and other administrative procedures are carried out. Then once they qualify to become refugees and to be admitted in our country, then they are taken to Tongogara camp. In terms of challenges, it's the only challenge that we have is they are increasing every day. So what it means is, in terms of resources, we need to increase them every day. And this is the reason why we are working with UNHCR in terms of provision for those services, so that we ensure that their welfare is fully catered for.
UNHCR country representative Tibagwa applauded the Zimbabwean government for accommodating the refugees despite the problems that the country is facing.
We have not had a chance to meet since the new dispensation, and this time has afforded us an opportunity to come and thank the government for what they are doing for refugees, and also point out the achievements of government so far, and also point out the challenges. And I'm very happy that we are finding solutions to most of the challenges that are facing us.
Kagonye said Zimbabwe now has over 11,000 refugees at the Tongogara refugee holding camp in Manicaland province's Chipinge district. While there have been no clashes between the refugees and local communities, last year government admitted that it was struggling to provide for them. In June 2017, the government and UN agencies launched an inter-agency appeal for nearly $11 million following the influx of refugees and asylum seekers in the country. The government, however, has not disclosed if any funds have been raised. Most of the refugees coming into Zimbabwe are from countries such as Mozambique, Democratic Republic of Congo, Burundi, Rwanda, Mali, and Ethiopia. The government of Rwanda is encouraging refugees to come home. It says over the past year, about 1,500 from across Africa have returned home following government-sponsored Go and See programs. Kigali says the government has set up 3 transit centers for returnees that include shelter, education, and health services, with long-term goal of reintegrating them back into their communities. Rwandan officials also say those wishing to stay in host countries will be issued national identity cards and passports so they can retain their nationality. Once they receive those materials, they'll be eligible for permanent residence or work permits in Zimbabwe. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Patricia Mudadigwa.
You're listening to Zimbabwe Today, live from Voice of America Studio 22. I'm Chidonjere in Washington, D.C. At 47 past the hour, we continue with the news. Telecom tycoon Strive Masiwa has become Zimbabwe's first billionaire. Mr. Masiwa is now worth $1.7 billion. He controls Econet Group, a Zimbabwe-listed mobile phone company. Many took to social media to congratulate him and add a few of their own comments.
Dr. M. Muzi says, point of correction, he is our first legit billionaire.
Simbo Youssef says, congratulations, sir. Sure, there is still more ahead. You're too focused to be coasting here.
Mark Potts says, I wonder if his accounts have been audited. Just saying.
Mia Cooper says, he is Zimbabwean, but based in London, so those who are relating his wealth to Zimbabwean inflation, get your facts right.
K. John says, everyone is complaining. His money is invested with the colonial masters in the UK. He has no relevance to Zimbabwe, only his birthright.
Mose Jonas says, Strive Masiwa is a wit, and he certainly worked hard for it. I'm not really surprised.
Emmanuel Katewu says, congratulations. We need him as an independent future president. We are fed up with the poor presidents who are busy searching for money to first fill their pockets.
That was a sample of comments on Zimbabwe's first billionaire, telecom tycoon Strive Masiwa.
Vateereri veStudio 7 tunoda kukuzivisai kuti tava nezvimwe zvirongwa zvakatanga zvatichange tichikupakurirai kubva na 6 a.m. kuseni kwega kwega na 2 p.m. masikati ega ega nechirongwa chenyu chamagaro ziva cha 7 p.m. mazuva ose. Munokwanisa kutibata pa 909 medium wave frequency, pa 4930 short wave, 15580 shortwave ne 6080 shortwave mazuva ose. Musakangana kuti tichangezve tichitepfenyura pa Facebook page yedu ye VOA Shona. Kana musati mafarira Facebook page yedu, ibvai maenda ikoko motsvaga pakanzi like mubva matifarira. Tokuyeuchidzai zvakare zvirongwa izvi zvinenge zvichiitwa na 6 a.m., 2 p.m. na 7 p.m. manheru ega ega. Musakanganwe.
Hundreds of Nigerian refugees have returned home from Libya over the past 2 months. They are part of an evacuation of undocumented migrants stranded in the North African country while trying to reach the European Union. The International Organization for Migration says up to 5,000 Nigerians may be in Libya. They and many others not only fail to make it to Europe, but become prey to traffickers who have sold them into slavery. Officials say a large percentage of the returnees are from Edo State in southern Nigeria and are now being resettled there. Reporter Isaac Linus was recently in the capital, Benin City, where he met with the returnees. VOA's William Eagle asked him about some of their stories.
A trafficker will come to Benin, and he's from Benin. He will take some of them, like people that I met, they told me. They will pay him money to take them to Libya, and from Libya, he would introduce them to another trafficker who is going to take them across the sea. But at the end of the day, this trafficker will go and sell them off to other Libyans, Libyan rebels. And these rebels, according to what these returnees told us, they control the community. They are like the government of the community. They stay in Libya. What the picture that these people gave us was that Libya has no government. So every rebel group that has ammunition can just take any part of the country and control it. So these traffickers sell these people intending going to Europe to these people. And at the time that they are being sold, they are not even aware that they are being sold. I met a boy whom was sold for $400. They sell you to a certain Libyan, and this Libyan wants to make money off you. So they will keep on beating you. They beat them 3 times a day. So when they are beating you, they put you on phone with your mother or your father or your relations back here in Benin. And you would be telling your parents that, please, I've been sold to this man. And this man says he needs 1 million naira. 1 million naira is about $2,500.
How are these people able to break free and to be taken by the IOM or the Nigerian government back to Edo State?
The story by CNN, you know, when CNN broke the story about the slavery, the slave market in Libya. And also, the Nigerian government, the state, like the Edo State government, they said they've been aware about these stories and they've been making efforts on how, since August, I spoke to the chairman of Edo State, who is in charge of these people returning back, and she told us that they've started since August. It's just that they've not been able to reach them over there. So IOM now started moving from camp. They now collaborated with the Libyan government, and they started moving from camp to camp. And in every camp that they meet these Nigerian immigrants, they would tell them that, okay, yes, some of our brothers that we came with, some of our sisters that we came with, they are stuck in Soso City, they are stuck in Soso Village, they are stuck in that community. So that was how the IOM began to understand, okay, this is where these people are located, and they started picking them out.
Now that they've been taken back to Edo State, what is Edo State government doing to help rehabilitate these people?
Immediately, they pick them up from the airport in Lagos. They transport them down to Edo State. They profile them. They kind of take their data, their names, where they're from, who are their relations, and all of that. Then they keep them in a camp, in hotel. So those who are sick have been taken to hospital. Then afterwards, they get them reunited with their relations. Then from there, there's a government camp where they come for training. They train them. They give them vocational training on trades like farming, fishery, poultry farming, and fashion design, like tailoring. Then after they train them, the government have NGOs whom they are working with, and these NGOs are the ones that train them, particularly this NGO called Initiative for Youth Awareness on Immigration and Development. One of the main NGOs that is training these people. So after a while, they give them certificates. And before then, the government is giving them a token of money of about, I think it's 30,000 naira each month, which it gives them just a token of money to help them while they're around. That goes on for 3 months. Then after 3 months, they must have graduated from that training. They give them some kind of capital to start off their trade.
And Linus, what is the reaction of the people of Edo State to the return of their fellow citizens?
It's a mixed reaction, Bill, I tell you. First of all, it is agony when they see their people come back in such a very bad level, bad nature. They look very famished, they look very tired, they look sickly. You know, some of them, they look as if they have mental issues. Then they are also happy. At the same time, they will be happy to have these people back. But again, one of what I noticed was that there is fear amongst the people that these people have seen all kinds of criminality on their way to Libya. All kinds of, they've mixed up with these terrorists, they've mixed up with the worst rebels who have fought wars in Libya, in Chad, even terrorists on the way. And at the end of the day, they suffer all kinds of inhuman treatment in this cell. So they think that these people are not in the right frame of mind to come and live with them in the society. This trafficker that I spoke with was telling me how some of them have even started robbing people. So the society is scared that if these people are not properly integrated into the system, they can turn to a security threat to them.
That was Isaac Linus in Benin City. He's been meeting with hundreds of refugees returning from Libya. He is speaking with VOA's William Eagle. That is it this evening for us on VOA's Zimbabwe Today. I'm Kutsunai Mutetwa.
And I'm Chidondere. We'll be back again on Monday at 9:30 p.m. Zimbabwe time for the latest news and analysis in English. VOA Shona and Ndebele broadcast can be heard at 7 a.m., 2 p.m., and 7 p.m. Zimbabwe time.
Stay with us around the clock on Facebook at Studio 7, VOA Ndebele, and VOA Shona, as well as our VOA website, www.studio7news.com. We leave you now with the song Particular.
And since I have it at the moment, you don't wanna shine my light on. Get your life, little mama, won't you get your life on? Ain't nothing cooler than the wrong moves when you do them to the right song, the right song. Let's shoot this movie and put the shit on repeat. I hope this memories are making me fall asleep. Before we hit the road, put our phones on silent. Nobody's trying to bring sand to the beach. What would it take to change plans for the weekend? Cause I am trying to kick it like eat. The whole thing, the pre-party, the pre-sex. Then we hit the major league with a Jesus.
Yeah, I like you, girl, in particular. You in particular. See, I like your waist in particular. I like you, girl, in particular. Yeah, you in particular. Say, I like your waist in particular. There, yeah, give me love one of these days. Ha, got it, go. Now you stop it, mommy, you already know, mom. Got it, baby, got it, go. Me, I can't lie, oh. I like you, girl, in particular. Can I see your particulars? I've been screening you like una película. So baby, let's steer it up. Give me that love, girl. When we talk.